Everybody. Hey, what's up? Welcome back. This is Up Back Through, a soccer coaching podcast, and we are back. It's been a couple weeks off. David Cellini, our Swedish tactical master, has had his hands full taking over an assistant coaching role with a team in Sweden. He is back, and I am back, and I am Eddie Prue. I am a skills and technique coach based in Seattle, Washington. And it is good to be back. So let's say hi to David first of all, and then I'll introduce the episode. So good morning to you, David. How are you, man?
Hi, Eddie. Yeah, I'm doing well. As you said, busy period. So I'm still coaching my university team for a few more weeks, and then I've started working as an assistant coach in the Swedish Division One. So I have my hands full and have a lot of stuff to do if you're connected to my studies as well. But yeah, good to be back. Good to be back talking. And we'll try and be a bit more regular in the coming weeks. We have some good ideas on what to do here. So stick with us. I think we'll bring out some good stuff over the coming months there.
I would agree with that. And I know you're busy, but I can't think of another line of or another type of busy that you'd rather be. I have to imagine that you're kind of enjoying that. So. Let me introduce tonight's episode. I'm really excited for this one because it's gonna touch on a team that is obviously my the team closest to my heart. But we're gonna talk about the strikerless system tonight, and this was kind of I don't want to say it emerged last season, but it really caught people's attention and was a little bit I want to say popularized by Pep Guardiola last season with Manchester City when Sergio Aguero was out injured for so much of the season. So, what are your thoughts on the strikerless system? Is it effective? What kind of, issues can it pose? And what do you think about it? Do you employ it at all?
I think it's very interesting in terms of like what your objective is. And personally, I like having a lot of players centrally. To try and take control of the game by having the ball and also by blocking the other team from attacking through central areas. And that's very easily done if you have a lot of players there rather than having them spread out wide. So I do use it at times, and I think we'll get into that later. But the big thing for me is that when you have someone playing from a striker position and dropping off, and what we call a false nine, or if you just play that player as a number 10, like in a diamond or something instead, you automatically get a lot of body centrally, and you get them positioned on different heights up the pitch. So you create depth within your attacking structure without losing the like interconnectedness between the players. So for someone like City, when they have so many talented technical players that can play in central areas and are really good at playing in central areas, you automatically get that sense of control of the game. So if you have someone like De Bruyne playing as a 10 and he's playing off the center backs, you create a dilemma for the center backs because normally center backs don't want to leave their position. They want to play in a very tight space with full backs tacked in, so they're always protected. But if you don't have anyone around you, it's very difficult to defend. So because many defenders orientate themselves after the opponent. So if you play against Zlatan, he will usually be stood in an area that's not the biggest on the pitch. So you know that, okay, if I'm playing against him, I just need to be tight. That's my job now, is to be tight to Ibrahimovic. But if you have someone who just drops off and goes looking for the ball, and you basically defend in an area without an opponent in it, it's difficult to always be switched on for whatever happens around you. Because first of all, your midfield will be overloaded when the other team has, three, four, five players in those central areas. So they will struggle to deal with all of those technical players. But then also there will be someone at some point running in behind you. So you have to be switched on for that. And you get, my experience, a lot of defenders get caught between, okay, I need to step up and help my midfielders to win the ball, or I have to stay so I'm ready to defend whoever will run in behind and wherever that run will come from. So in terms of getting control of the game in central areas, I think it's really effective. I always remember the Barcelona team that Pep used, that Pep had back in like a decade ago when they played, particularly against Man United in the Champions League final in 2011, where they basically had Busquets at the base, they had Xavi and Iniesta in central midfield, and then they had Messi playing that false nine role, and he kept dropping, and he didn't only drop centrally, he dropped like slightly to the right, slightly to the left, and it was really difficult for United's two midfielders to pick up all of these players and block the spaces they played in. And then when you get that kind of control and you can move it up the pitch, you basically play a large portion of the game in the opponent's half, and then it's obviously a big help for you to get closer to the goal. It's easy to create chances and stuff. So the benefits are obvious in terms of gaining control of games, gaining control of central areas, which are where I want to play when I coach, and I think a lot of coaches are the same. The issues that can arise when you play without a static central presence up front is for me the biggest one is that you have no one who can attack central areas. It's more difficult to attack like the areas in around the penalty spot if you don't have anyone standing there. So you need to work a lot on how you get players in those positions. You need to work on your two wide players, how they make runs into those central areas from wide. So you make those diagonal runs, which I think are really effective when they work well. Or if the central players you have in midfield, if a midfielder or if this number 10 or false nine has dropped off, if they can turn and attack that space from behind. But if you don't do that well, then at the end of the day, you might just keep the ball, but you won't create that many chances because the defense will be quite comfortable when no one attacks the dangerous areas near their goal. So that's the difficulty to get that right. But that just, I mean, it all comes down to coaching. It all comes down to coaching. If you work on how to attack those areas, then you can get a big advantage because, as I said, it's very difficult to defend a space where there's no opponent to take into consideration. But if you then, as an attacking team, can attack that space dynamically by having players run into it, or you can basically get the ball and turn for an attacking player in centralized and just run at those defenders to catch them off guard, then you can create all kinds of chaos that you might not be able to create if you just have someone standing there and blocking that space. So it's a very intriguing setup, regardless if you play two midfielders and two tens, or if you play a defensive midfielder, two central ones outside them, and then a ten and play like in a diamond. Regardless of how you use that space, it's intriguing to see how teams can benefit from that system. And I mean, Pep is probably the most famous example, and we'll come into his City team more. And I just want to mention the Italy team in the Euro final who did this when Mancini, after like 55 minutes, removed Ciro Immobile from the game and put Domenico Berardi on, who's a winger, and he played him on the wing, and he played Lorenzo Insigne, who started as a left winger. He played him centrally to basically drop off the England defense and help Italy overload central areas, which helped them control the game even further. And in the end, they got their goal and they got the trophy. So that was a good decision on him, on his part, on how to get control of the game, and just helped show people how effective it can be if you use it well and if you have players who can attack those areas dynamically rather than being there statically. But you're someone who's watched a lot of striker-less games with your team. How do you view the idea of playing without the central static option?
Well, I think, like you said, it's all about the coaching aspect of it. And so if you can get those central players comfortable with the idea of you know, rotating into that high position and occupying the central defenders, that's what it comes down to for me. Because, for example, the Manchester City game against PSG in the Champions League last year. I can't remember. I think we were texting during it or something. We were communicating somehow, and we were both just like noticing that there's just nobody occupying the central defenders, nobody staying high, and it was just so easy for PSG to defend, even though they did go on to lose the game. Manchester City won, but it was just it was very clear that those attacking midfield players, just none of them really wanted to be the one to go and play high and stretch the defense and make them take notice of somebody that was near to them. So as long as you can kind of figure out the rotation and figure out, like how to balance the attack in terms of, keeping someone central and then making sure that those central defenders have to be wary of a striker-like presence. That's, to me, that's what it all comes down to. Otherwise, then you have, players that are always comfortable on the wing, players that are always comfortable in the number 10 position. So it's just a matter of getting that rotation correct. And I mean, we saw it last year to incredible effect. And one thing I want to mention here is the call for City to sign a striker this summer. I had to log off Twitter a lot too many times, just because the fan base of Manchester City is, I think, a little bit I'm Manchester City till death, this, but it's like I think we became a little bit jaded, a little bit spoiled, in the sense that like we were demanding a striker. We were like, where is Harry Kane? Where is Erling Haaland? And to me, I'm thinking, do you guys not remember last season when we went on a 21 game winning streak and Sergio Aguero very, very rarely featured in that entire time? So to me, that's kind of another way that Pep has kind of revolutionized the game, and it might be the way forward for a lot of teams who want to just like play this kind of really like build like slow build up and interactive and like position, like changing positions and attack. It might be the new thing, it might be the next way that Pep has kind of like made things change, honestly, because if you look at the stats for Man City last year in the league, Gundogan was our top scorer in the league with 13 goals. Sterling pitched in with 10, De Bruyne with 6, and then I think Mahrez had 9, and Foden had something like that too. So, I mean, the goals came from everywhere, and, you can't argue that it was highly – I mean, that was the longest winning streak in Premier League history, if I'm not – or in English football history, because not all the games were Premier League games. But that's – to me, that's, I don't see, and I've been very vocal saying that, when Cristiano Ronaldo became a rumor, I was extremely excited just for the fact of like, just crushing the hearts of United fans. But I didn't think that we needed a striker. I really didn't. After Aguero left, I think people were very like kind of shocked into like, they were kind of fooled into thinking like we have to replace this player. He's probably our biggest club legend in our history, to be honest. So when he left, people kind of freaked out a little bit and said we have to replace him, when the truth of the matter is I don't think we do. I think we have the attacking options, especially with the addition of Jack Grealish. We spoke on this on a recent episode. I think that the style of football that City will play, they have the exact personnel they need. I think the scoring threats are going to come from everywhere. And I can't wait to see more of it, to be honest. I love the, when it's right, it's some of the most amazing football to watch. So that's my take on it. But if you're not Pep Guardiola and you don't have that team, then maybe it's not the right, option.
Yeah, I think if we take it back to that game you mentioned against PSG, so what City did in that game, if people don't remember, like they played a back four as they normally do, and then they had a double pivot in midfield. I think it was Gundogan and Rodri who played in central midfield, and then they played like De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva as two tens ahead of them. So they had basically a box in midfield, and then they played Mahrez and Foden really wide on each wing, and that's what we mean with them not having a central striking option. Their build-up was great. They kept the ball well, and it felt like they had total control in terms of how the game how the game was looking. But as you rightly pointed out, they never really, it didn't feel like they threatened PSG's defense that much, because they didn't really in that game get the dynamic right when someone would run in behind, when if the wingers would kind of come inside and in the final third make those diagonal runs that I talked about earlier, which I think, like, I think they're the most effective runs you can make as an attacking player. Like, if you imagine you have a defense set up and you play on the outside of that defense as a wide player, and if you, like, if the ball is on the left side, all the defenders will be looking towards that side, right? So if you can make a run diagonally from the right wing in this case and run behind, like, the center back closest to you, so you're running in between the center back and fullback, you will automatically gain an advantage, because the defenders need to look at the ball on the opposite side. And the ball carrier, imagine that's a De Bruyne on the ball, he will put that ball in the space you wanted. So if you can make that diagonal run and the ball will be just be clipped over the defense, you will definitely be in. And then if you have someone who can come and attack that central space, you can just lay that ball off for like a tap in, or you can might even go for a shot yourself. But when you get that right, then there's no need for someone to stand in a central area. Just, yeah, he's our striker. He's gonna be there, because then you have other players attacking those spaces dynamically. I think that's easier when you play a diamond, because you have that 10 who will be closest to the action of getting into that space. But you can have other midfielders attacking that space as well. You can play a narrow diamond with two strikers very centered, but they can also run into that space rather than standing there. So if you get that right, it's really effective. And I think in football in general, we're moving towards, or actually we're already there, this idea of dominating central areas has taken hold in football. Like, there's so many teams that look to combine centrally and get through defenses centrally, that more and more teams are trying to make that area compact, because they know the teams want to play there. So then having just two players wide and play them really wide can actually be an advantage, because then you can get it with all your players centrally. You will force the opponent to defend narrow, and then you open up the wings, and then you can attack them with good 1v1 play, and then just attack the box with runs from deep. So I think we'll see more and more teams deploying this type of play. I think Liverpool already does it to some degree when Firmino plays centrally and drops off, and you have Mane and Salah attacking central areas coming mm-hmm. inside from the wings. So it's already there, but I think City have taken it to the next level. And during that win streak, as you mentioned, like, they played De Bruyne centrally, they play Ferran Torres centrally, they play Mahrez centrally. So they keep changing, and I think that's really interesting to look at from an outsider's perspective.
And I think that real quick, one point that I want to make is I think that Messi is the one that kind of gave birth to this entire system in a way, just because like Pep, he never really wanted like a true, well, I don't want to say he never wanted it, because he had David Villa at Barca, but he never wanted David Villa was a very mobile striker. He could play all along the front line, you know. But you remember when Ibrahimovic went to Barcelona, Pep didn't want anything to do with him. And that's just because he's so one-dimensional, and he's one of the best at what he does, but he's not going to venture onto the wing and take players on. He's going to sit right in front of goal, and he's just going to get his head or whatever body part on a ball, you know, and that's just his game. But I don't think Pep like had the idea for this entire, like, you know, no true number nine back then. But I think that was like the fact that he coached Messi for all those years, I think that it kind of like gave birth to the idea that you can play without a true number nine at all times. And that, I mean, we see it now, and we're going to see a lot more of it this season at City.
Yeah. That team in general, Barcelona, they did so many things tactically that people can look back on in like 50 years and see what they did. Because, and I'm basically, if you just filled that team with midfielders and had one or two wide players, if that was Dani Alves or Pedro, or he played Villa wide as well, they just did stuff that maybe teams have done, but like team, I hadn't seen it before. And I mean, there was some point he played Cesc Fabregas and Messi for a long spell, like together up front, and they basically dovetailed someone. Sometimes one would attack space in behind, one would drop off, or they would just both drop off and they play without the striker. So yeah, I think that team was the front runner, and now he's basically doing it again. So yeah, interesting to see what he does. And I think this is, I've coached my student team this season, and it's obviously a much lower level than what City will do. But we tried something that worked really well for us, because we played in a diamond. So we had a back four, a midfield diamond, and we played two split strikers. And I had a squad for a game that didn't really suit that system. We had a really good wide player, or actually two really good wide players, and we had no like proper strikers. So we had a lot of midfielders. I had to play a midfielder at the right back, and we had two wingers basically in our striker position. So what we did, so we played like our normal shape in our own half, and we played without the striker. So we played our two wingers as wide players to get us some width, and then we just had the remaining players centrally, really, because our fullbacks played quite narrow. And then when we reached the attacking half, we made sure our two strikers come wingers played really wide to give us width, and we wanted to isolate them 1v1. Then with our midfield diamond, we moved them like up a step. So we had our central midfielders move up to become 10s, and then we kept our 10 in like a 10 position, and we moved our fullbacks inside. So we basically in the attacking half had two center backs, then we played two fullbacks either side of a defensive midfielder in central midfield. So basically they became our three central mids. And then we had three 10s, still no striker, but three 10s, and then two really high and wide wingers. So we had so many players centrally, and we had basically a 2-3-3 formation if you just look at our central areas. We played against two center mids, so we dominated the game centrally. But for us to attack the spaces in behind, we had these three 10s like taking turns in attacking that space. So we always needed someone to make a run to stretch the defense to get that space between the lines to play. And we worked on this for, I don't know, 50 minutes twice in training before the game, just to get those movements right. And then when we came to the game, I think we created so many chances just by having no player just standing in between the center backs. So they were always looking at, okay, so there's three players centrally. They're a bit too far away from us to go and mark them, because if we go and mark them, we leave the space in behind. But if we play the ball into one of the 10s, a center back would jump out to press, and then we would have another one of the other two attacking that space in behind. So it was really difficult for them to defend, and it worked really well. And I'm not sure if that would work in any game, and how that could look at the highest level if you play with that many players just in that position. Because if a team would defend better, they could just try and close that space with their midfield and play very, very tight. But on this occasion, the spaces were big, and we were able to capitalize with our play between the lines, but also having one or two of these three always attacking space centrally and behind, while our strikers just kept with to try and stretch the defensive line. And I mean, that just shows that even if you play at the absolute highest level, or if you play at a much lower level with just, in this case, students, or if you have kids that you coach or whatever, you can always try stuff out. It's like tactical, I'm not going to say like the greatest tactical ideas can only be used at the highest level, because it's difficult with some ideas to implement them at when the quality isn't as high. But you can always try stuff out, and you can always adapt your team by having ideas that might normally be reserved for the greatest coaches at the highest level. I mean, you can easily try playing without a striker with your kids' team, just to give them something new to work on. And if you coach, like I did now, a student team, you can always try and implement a structure that they haven't seen before, But normally people like trying stuff out. And I mean, if we can do it with that team, there's no reason no one else can try playing without a central striker and you know, gain good results from it too. So I'm all for people trying, and hopefully they can get in touch and tell us how they do.
Yeah, it's a great point for you know, for teams at lower levels. It's really good for players to see different systems and see how they work and see how they fail, and for the coaches to kind of try to explain, like, okay, we're going to try this formation now without a striker, and that's going to maybe, you know, like, give us more space here, et cetera, et cetera. So even if it fails miserably, then hopefully you can analyze why, and that's another important factor in development for players, to see how a system might work and see how it might fail and see how to combat different systems and all those things. So yeah, I hope coaches do take that on board and, you know, do try different things and explain what they are trying to their players at the same time, because that's the best way to figure out tactical shifts and adjustments and different ways to attack and defend. And it's really, really important for the development of players and their understanding of the game. So yeah, hopefully maybe this season is you know, the first season that a team will just dominate with a strikerless system. Let's hope so. Let's hope it, you know, gives City 103 points this season and a Champions League. But who knows? It's really fun to watch when they get it right. And yeah, the Premier League is back underway, and we're going to be back underway too. We're going to get some good content out. And yeah. So anything else you want to say before we wrap this up?
Tune in to Serie A coverage and watch some of the teams there. I mean, we have some very intriguing ideas being put into place by coaches like Simone Inzaghi at Inter and Maurizio Sarri at Lazio. So and Mourinho's there and doing okay with Roma as well. So go and watch Serie A over the weekend, and maybe we'll talk about that next week. But yeah, there's some lessons to be learned in Italy as well.
We couldn't go an entire episode without David mentioning his beloved Italy and Serie A. So I don't blame you. That's very true. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on there. We've talked about it on episodes in the past, but yeah, a lot of good football being played out there, and we're going to cover it all. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. Don't forget to check out the blog, runningtheshowblog.wordpress.com, where David is bringing you a lot of really great tactical pieces and lessons for coaches and just, you know, soccer fans in general. So yeah, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We will be back soon. Good night.